President Joe Biden called last week for an intelligence probe into the origins of COVID-19. That's after the Wall Street Journal reported on a U.S. intelligence report that found that three researchers at a lab in Wuhan, China, got sick enough to need hospital care in November of 2019, roughly the same time when many public health experts think the virus began circulating. The reporting is raising new questions about the possibility that the virus could have leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China. That was a theory many public health experts initially said was very unlikely. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what we know about COVID origins and the possibility of a lab leak? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Gordon is a national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. He's the reporter who broke last week's story on the intelligence report. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Okay, glad to be here.
I gave just the basics of this intelligence report. Flesh that out a little for us, please, about the workers at this lab.
Well, you know, for more than a year, there's been a debate about how the virus emerged in China. And in January, the State Department issued a statement on January 15th, still available on the website, that said, the U.S. government has reason to believe that several of the researchers at the lab became ill in autumn of 2019. And what I did, along with my Wall Street Journal colleagues, is I probed for what the evidentiary base or the intelligence was behind this public assertion. And what we were told is that there was an intelligence report that three researchers from China's Wuhan Institute of Virology became sick enough in November of 2019 that they sought hospital care. We don't know if they were all hospitalized, but they went to the hospital for care, according to this report. And, you know, this is circumstantial evidence. It doesn't prove that the virus emerged from the lab, but it certainly suggests that further investigation of the lab theory and of other possible origins of the virus is needed. And indeed, that's the conclusion President Biden himself came to as he announced last week.
Now, a key point here is we still don't know the origin of COVID-19. As you say, calls for more probes. One thing that does seem clear is that apart from releasing the genome of the virus that causes COVID-19, there are a lot of concerns, Michael, about China's transparency on this. Can you talk about some of those concerns?
Yeah, I mean, what part of what has elevated interest in this is China has not been transparent, to be diplomatic about it, about what about the lab, what the research at the lab, the health records of individuals at the lab. They haven't made any of that evidence available. And there's other sort of medical data that China has also not shared with the international community. For example, there was, according to WHO data, there were some 76,000 people who were ill between October and December in 2019. And China says, well, 92 of those are potential COVID cases, but they haven't shared data on this larger group. So they're sort of saying you have to take their word for it. Also, the WHO has asked for access to Wuhan blood banks to, in order to test samples and try to get a sense of whether there are antibodies indicating the presence of the virus prior to December 2019. And the Chinese authorities initially declined to do this. Then they said they would do it, but they haven't yet done it. So those are the sorts of things that have fed suspicions, not only on the part of Trump administrations, but also on the part of the some Biden administration's officials. Also, I just think I need to point out that the alternative thesis, the zoonotic thesis, that the virus leapt from a bat to a host to a human being, which had been sort of the dominant hypothesis for a while. Well, in over a year, they've not found a single animal infected with COVID-19. Now, there may be a whole variety of innocent reasons for that, but while there is no conclusive proof of the lab theory, there's no proof for the alternative theory either.
Talking to Michael Gordon, national security correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, looking at the origins of COVID-19, some of the latest information and lack of information out there on the subject. Michael, you write that, and there's no secret to anybody, I don't think, here in the U.S., the partisan divide is complicating this issue and how it's talked about. What kind of things do you see there?
Well, I think that, and I think this is unfortunate because this is just should be an empirical issue about investigating a virus. And it's very important to learn how it emerged, because if it was a lab accident, that suggests we need to know more about how to protect against lab accidents, particularly when they're manipulating virus. If it arose out of nature, it's a different set of problems. But it became a bit politicized last year when President Trump and some Republican lawmakers jumped on the lab theory. And some of the versions of the lab theory that were promoted by proponents on that side go well beyond a lab accident. There are people who assert that China might have been working on biological weapons in the lab, and that's what escaped. Well, I think now the lab theory is viewed as something perhaps more benign, but still quite serious for the World Health community, which is that China may have taken samples of the virus from a cave in southwest China, which is the only place where it's otherwise been found. They brought it to Wuhan, 1,500 kilometers away, to work on it and manipulated it in some way with the intention of trying to create a vaccine, and somehow it escaped. That's what the lab theory is now. And I do think it's significant that when President Biden in his statement indicated there was one U.S. intel element was leaning toward that theory, two were leaning against it. So it no longer quite has the same partisan flavor as the debate had earlier. And I think perhaps that's good, because at bottom, it's really just a scientific and intelligence question.
And when we say the lab theory, as you were just pointing out, there are multiple possibilities of what it could mean from a lab, anywhere from biological weapons research to, as you mentioned, augmenting gain of function research to develop vaccines to, hey, we're collecting and cataloging viruses and mishandled this natural virus in the lab. The lab theory covers a lot of ground.
Right. And since the WHO team was only there for 3 hours, they didn't develop any evidence that would point in one direction to another. And it's actually the theory that it arose naturally in nature and leaked from the lab, and also not entirely incompatible. It's possible it arose in nature and they took it to the lab to study it, but the lab is the location from which it emerged. I mean, geography plays a role here. The province where the virus was found in bats is 1,500 kilometers away in southwest China, and the Wuhan Institute of Virology is several kilometers away from where it was detected in the city. And we know more now than we knew a year ago also. I mean, the famous wet market, which was originally thought to be the point of origin, is no longer seen as such, including by the Chinese, because they found, it seems to have been, what happened there was a super spreader event, because they found cases that predated its detection in the wet market. So right now we have two competing theories, and President Biden has asked for an assessment in 90 days. The question is, are they going to be able to come up with a good, solid assessment that advances the issue without any cooperation on the part of the Chinese? Because the Chinese have indicated that they pretty much don't intend to host any more international researchers on their soil to dig into this.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to wrap up with you on, Michael. What are countries like the U.S., organizations like the World Health Organization asking for China at this point to get information without having to rely on data collected by China?
Well, I mean, it's very hard to get to the bottom of this without the cooperation of the host nation. And the Biden administration's first course of action was to go to the WHO and request a further probe that would have, without even mentioning the lab theory, that's really what they were looking at. And they wanted to dig into it a little more. The head of WHO has said that the team efforts there were not sufficient. And so that's what they were hoping for. But the WHO operates pretty much by consensus. You can't force a nation to cooperate with an investigation. if it doesn't want to cooperate. That's one of the limitations of the WHO. Biden tried that. Chinese indicated that they'd cooperated about as much as they intended to, and they thought there should be investigations in the U.S. Trying to deflect the pressure. Congress was insisting intel be declassified.
We're picking up our talk about the origins of COVID-19 and new reporting that has some reconsidering the idea that the virus could possibly have leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. Dr. Patrick Remington joins us now, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Remington, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Rob.
What kind of things do we need to know to understand how COVID-19 ended up in human populations?
Well, first, just listening to the interview of Michael Gordon from the Wall Street Journal, I think it just emphasizes the importance of investigative reporters really getting to the bottom of this, of scouring all the evidence, the scientific, the intelligence reports. And what he's found is that there's credible evidence for both possibilities. One possibility is that this, in effect, jumped from bats to other animals and then to humans, and that remains a possibility. But it is a possibility that it was leaked from a lab. I think he did comment about the there's little evidence that this was a bioweapon, that this was really intended to create harm worldwide. There's no supporting evidence for that. But I think he's done a real service to the country to open up this investigation and to really look at the evidence and look at the science.
What kind of things do we want to see for lab transparency? There are labs around the world that study potentially dangerous viruses. That's generally a good thing. It gives us early tools to use against them. But how do we mitigate the risks of a possible exposure?
Well, it's a great question. These laboratories have different degrees of safety, and it's important when there's any virus being studied to have the highest level of safety. And you've seen those in movies and on television where people are fully suited with a separate air exchange coming into their suits. And that needs to happen worldwide in any place where these potentially dangerous viruses are being studied. But I think the other point, Rob, is this is an interesting debate, but it's almost an academic debate because this is not an either or. Do we promote lab safety or do we do vigilance for zoonotic transmission? We need to do both. We need to have absolutely the safest labs possible. We need this kind of basic research, but we also need to be in the field doing surveillance for the possibility that viruses through other animals and can mutate and to get to humans. So both are possible. We're not debating whether neither is possible. We're saying both are possible. So we need vigilance in laboratory settings, but also in community settings through surveillance and really tracking the potential for zoonotic spread.
Can you talk about the importance of international cooperation? Because China did one big piece of transparency that, as I understand it, was key. They released the genome of the virus really early on. That gave a head start to vaccine development around the world. So I guess good on them. On the other hand, it seems like they're being very untransparent with this search for the origins of COVID-19. How important is it for countries to be able to work together?
I think it's true. It's as important for the United States as it is for China and all countries in the world not to mix science and politics. And in fact, if you look at the scientists involved, they've been very forthcoming in revealing the information that they had about the genome and also about the potential source of this infection. But politicians and elected officials get involved and are concerned how that information may reflect on their country. And we know that happens in China. We know that happens in this country. So I think it's really important for the scientific community, beginning with WHO and the CDC, to be at the forefront of this investigation. But again, a point I want to make is that whether it's a lab accident or through zoonotic spread, it really shouldn't change our vigilance in both settings. We need to be really careful that this doesn't happen in the future through a lab accident, but also we need to have really good surveillance to be able to find these cases if they do occur in the future, or I should say when they occur in the future, and intervene early so there's not the next pandemic.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about the origins of COVID-19. Still a lot of question marks there, and what it tells us about the future of disease prevention and treatment. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Krista is with us in Columbus. Krista, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Krista?
I had heard that it wasn't possible for humans to get a virus from an animal unless it was injected. Is this true?
Krista, thanks for the call. Good basic question there, Dr. Remington. We get a lot of viruses from animals, right?
Well, yes and no. There are a lot of viruses that are specific to animals. Most bat viruses don't grow in humans, and so they're not a danger. So many people who study bat viruses don't have to use the highest level of safety because the virus itself only affects bats and not humans. But for some reason, this virus mutated and got a little section of the DNA, maybe a percent or a few percent of the DNA, and that allowed it to find a receptor on a human cell and use that to get into the human cell. So that mutation, and again, whether that was done experimentally in a lab or whether that was done through another animal, maybe the bat virus infected an animal that then change that virus and allowed it to infect humans, we don't know. But the bottom line is some viruses aren't a danger to humans because they remain in animals and humans aren't a host. We worry when those viruses somehow develop the ability to infect humans because we've never seen them before. We don't have any immunity to them, and they can be really deadly. The SARS, MERS, and now SARS-CoV-2 viruses are great examples of viruses that did not originate in humans, came into humans through this zoonotic spread, and then created all these health problems.
Thanks a lot for that call, Krista. Now, with zoonotic viruses, ones that come from non-human animals to us humans, I mean, it seems like we're searching for a needle in a haystack if we're trying to pre-detect these things, right? There's zillions of viruses. Most of them aren't going to affect us. How do we spot the ones that could maybe?
Well, it depends if you're an optimist or a pessimist, or maybe a realist. An optimist would say we spread out across the world and we do careful surveillance through the CDC, but then the China CDC and every public health organization in the country, in the world. And we are vigilant about these viruses. When they first happen, we eradicate them using standard quarantine and isolation methods. And if that's not possible, we quickly develop a vaccine. But the pessimist would say that as long as animals and humans are mixing in these far reaches of the world, that we will always be at risk of seeing viruses that jump from animals to humans. And so it's not a question of if the next pandemic occurs. It's a question of when. And the more connected we are as a globe, the sooner that next pandemic is going to come.
Oh, and I didn't get to one point in Krista's question. She was wondering if the only way a virus could jump from an animal, non-human animal, to a human is by injection. There are other routes, as I understand it.
Oh, well, these are SARS viruses, the coronaviruses are respiratory viruses. And obviously, that is of great concern because of its potential to spread. So there are some viruses that spread through bloodborne transmission. They're risky, but they don't have the potential for widespread epidemics and pandemics because they're not as likely to spread from person to person than a respiratory virus would.
Krista, thanks for that call. Dr. Remington, what are you watching for as the United States intelligence agencies, the World Health Organization, try to track down the original cause, the original point of transmission from animal to human with COVID?
Well, I think it's great that the Biden administration has decided to be open for investigation. My hope is that the scientists in China will cooperate. I think we heard Michael Gordon talk about the existence of blood stored from transfusion banks, the ability to go back and do really complicated but important epidemiology to find out if this virus actually was present, not in 2020, but in 2019, and really to see if it has the origin through zoonotic spread. Again, that's an important scientific question, but the practical, the policy recommendation shouldn't change. We should do both, regardless of what we find. If we ever find the source of this pandemic, we're not going to change the recommendation to have high security for biosafety labs, but also to have worldwide vigilance for the possibility or for the real potential that that viruses will continue to jump from animals to humans and cause disease in the future.
Dr. Remington, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for being here, Rob.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington, professor emeritus in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, with us today to talk about the evolution of the theories about origins of the COVID-19 virus. We also heard from Michael Gordon with the Wall Street Journal looking at the latest international intelligence on that question.